This is Will's Band of the Week for February 2nd, 2014. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett.
Hello.
Barrett's vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
And Chris.
Didn't say hello if it could.
I think it is.
And Chris's dryer would like to get to know Barrett's vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
But the dryer, I guess the dryer's not running, but the furnace is today.
Correct.
Yeah, it's probably a good day to have your furnace running. It, you know, what is it, like 15 degrees out there?
That's a heat wave.
Yeah, that's true. Last week, after we had that super cold wave, it got up to 15 degrees, and I was thinking, this feels warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I went running today, and it felt pretty nice.
Yeah.
It helps when it's sunny and it's not windy.
Right.
Which is the case today, so.
Yeah. Definitely helps.
Got up to 18 the other day, and I went walking around in shorts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like those guys, there's all those
flip-flops.
All of those guys on campus with wearing shorts and throwing frisbees and stuff in March when it gets up to 50. Yep.
You know who else wears a lot of shorts even in the winter is like kind of fat guys that, you know what I mean?
Because they have a lot
it's
of.
It's not comfortable to put pants on.
Yeah.
And they gain a little winter fluff and they're just like, I'm just going to have to wear these basketball shorts around all winter.
Yeah, a little
keep
natural.
Your eye out for that.
The natural insulation can help, definitely. Yep.
Wait. I will keep my eye out for the fat guy in Madison. All right.
Yeah, that's not hard to spot. It's like, right.
Well, I've forgotten to shave my legs, so that was a little bit embarrassing.
I would think so. Wow.
Indeed.
All right, well, here we are, all together again. It's
sure.
An emotional moment once again.
Except the vacuum, I'm upset about that.
Yeah, the vacuum's off.
Yeah.
I'm assuming the furnace is still going. You know, I'm only 3 feet from my furnace.
Well, you got
but
a
it's
quiet.
Quiet.
Wow, that could be an ad for your furnace.
Yeah,
that's because Barrett's a one percenter. He can
that's
afford
right.
a quiet furnace.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, we have geothermal heating, so all the mechanisms and stuff are like way underground. If that's how that works, I'm sure it is.
The infrastructure of Barrett's house
just completely made all that up.
It goes down like 100 feet down below, right? Below
right.
The house.
about 100 feet below, or however far like the Earth's crust, and you get below that, it's getting near the core center of the Earth or to hell, whichever however you like to look at it.
It's turned theological all of a sudden.
Pretty hot, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So your house is like the Lambeau Field turf where you have heated coils underneath your oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. So, speaking of Lambeau Field.
Oh.
That's a pretty bad segue, but today is Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah.
Right? Are you guys excited?
I'm more excited about the chili that I'm going to make, I think, than the
Ooh.
Game. But I think I will I'll probably watch most of the game. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, I probably watch it more just because of the spectacle. You know, everybody's been talking about it, and so it's like, well, you might as well become interested in it.
Right.
And, it has a little bit, some Wisconsin ties with the Seattle quarterback and one of the running backs for Denver and one of the coaches, it's
right.
fun.
Actually, the general manager for the Seahawks.
Oh, yeah. He was a Packer guy.
He's a Packer guy, and I just learned yesterday that he went to my grade school and middle school, and he's 5 years behind me. So,
wow, look how much more he accomplished, and he's 5 years younger than you.
Way to go.
He must feel terrible.
Representing for Notre Dame Middle School, Deep Pier, Wisconsin.
So for all the European fans out there listening, make sure you write all this stuff down.
Right.
Yeah.
But they'll be watching, won't they? Doesn't everybody in the world watch the Super Bowl?
A lot of people do. I don't know about Europe, though. Do we watch the World Cup final?
Yeah.
We might if the U.S. is in it, but what if they're not? Then do we not care? I don't know.
I'll watch it. I'll always watch it.
I've started caring a lot more.
When the U.S. had that ridiculous, exciting game, that was pretty cool.
And that was great.
Yeah, they kept showing the video of like crowds in bars going totally crazy. That was kind of cool.
It was an extra time, right? And
I think so, yeah.
They had to either win or tie, and that goal by the Donovan guy secured the tie or win, however it was.
Yeah.
And then they got beat by Ghana the next week, right?
This has been sports talk with people who know half of what they actually should.
But it's never been a requirement on this podcast that we know what we're talking about, right?
No, not at all.
I kind of wanted to follow the Premier League a little bit more, and I decided that that my team is going to be West Ham.
That's my team.
What?
I'll pick a new team.
No, you
I'll
know
pick
why?
A new team.
Well, no, I saw an interview with Keira Knightley, the actress. Lovely, lovely young woman. Big West Ham fan.
Oh, really?
So I figured I'm going to get a jersey and bump into her at some point, and we'll
that's
hit it
good,
off.
That's a good plan.
Great idea.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Do you guys have your you have your jerseys for the LA Kiss Arena football team?
I have not gotten mine yet, no. You know, I might not even get it after all. I'm having second thoughts.
Oh.
I think I'm not going to get it.
Huh.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I've been watching the in the lead up to the Super Bowl, the celebrity beach football thing, which goes on for like 4 hours, which is an embarrassment.
Good God.
There's currently a performance by some young woman who calls herself Paramore. Have you heard of this woman?
I thought Paramore was a band.
Is it? Okay, maybe it's a band.
I think
it's
a band.
But it's like this woman with short red hair. She's been singing for about 20 minutes now.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yuck.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't need any of that. I don't need any of the pregame stuff, except for the Puppy Bowl. You pretty much have to watch that, don't you?
Don't they have the Lingerie Bowl, too? What is that?
There might be the Lingerie Bowl, but I'm going to be watching the Puppy Bowl. And the big halftime performer is Keyboard Cat this year, so that'll be exciting, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it just gets better and better every year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's America. Things get better and better, bigger every year.
Do they still do the Bud Bowl? I think they quit that, right?
I forgot
where, like,
about
the Bud Light bottles play the Budweiser bottles in a football game.
Seems like maybe the Puppy Bowl took over for the Bud Bowl.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Can only have so many bowls. Yeah. All right. Should we turn the attention to music? We probably should, right? I guess we probably should start with this. And now it's time for the Death of the Week. Legendary protest folk singer Pete Seeger died this week. And he was pretty old. I think he was 94.
He was 90-something, yeah.
Full life.
Yeah. And so, do you guys have much background on Pete Seeger? One of you want to give a half-hour essay or something?
Well, the most notable thing about Pete Seeger I know is that at the Newport Folk Festival in 1965, he's the guy that tried to shut off the power when Bob Dylan went electric.
Yeah, that's true.
Pete Seeger was running around the back saying, shut it down, and then he like tried to take an axe or something and like cut the power cords.
Yeah.
Something like that, which is interesting because I actually just this morning I watched a piece on PBS about that Newport Folk Festival. Apparently some woman found this guitar in her attic, and it turns out it's the guitar Dylan was playing when he went electric that one night.
Wow.
Wow.
Apparently her dad, talk about the holy grail of finding, you know, music paraphernalia in your house. Apparently her dad used to be a pilot who flew Dylan around, and Dylan just left the guitar in his plane, and it's been sitting up in her attic, and, you know, she had it checked out by the guy who verifies instruments for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he verified that it was the guitar and figured it would probably sell from, you know, 500,000, something like that. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the guitars that you know, a handful of guitars that are most notable in musical history. So anyway, that was my segue to that story. But yeah, Pete Seeger.
So was he totally against the electrification of music? Was that the idea?
At that time he certainly was. I don't know if he changed after that. I would imagine in the 50 years that ensued, he kind of made peace with Bob Dylan and his legacy. But
you'd think so.
At that time, it was, you know.
Right, the fans weren't certainly.
It's heretical.
Yeah. I mean, the fans booed him off the stage. And he came back and finished the set acoustically later. But, you know, people say that after that, they saw Dylan sitting on the stairs just with his head in his hands going, oh, my God, what have I done?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I
heard that part of it. That's cool.
Yeah, but he went through with it, and I guess you could say he was vindicated. So Pete Seeger is like the Denver Broncos, if you will, of the of the folk music scene, or the Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo Bills.
See? the loser in the whole deal.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I did dig up some Pete Seeger music, so we should play some, I think.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Here's one called Little Boxes.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, and they all got put in boxes, little boxes, all the same. And there's doctors, and there's lawyers, and business executives, and they all get put in boxes, and they all come out the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, and they all get put in boxes, and they all come out the same.
With little boxes.
You sure that's not Kermit the Frog? That sounds like the Rainbow Connection.
Hey, I've got a... Well, this is off topic again. This is actually going to get into the Grammys, but you guys saw Paul Williams up there with Daft Punk?
Daft Punk, yeah.
He wrote Rainbow Connection for Kermit the Frog.
Yes, he did.
So there you go. All right, back to Pete Seeger.
I believe Paul Williams actually makes a cameo in the original Muppet movie.
He does.
He plays the piano at the El Slizo Cafe.
Nice.
Man.
Showtime at the El Slizo.
You guys know your trivia, man. This is great. All right. Back to Pete Seeger. This one's, what did you learn in school today?
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that Washington never told a lie. I learned that soldiers seldom die. I learned that everybody's free, and that's what the teacher said to me. That's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends. I learned that murderers die for the crimes, even if we make a mistake sometime. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school. What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? I learned our government must be strong. It's always right and never wrong. Our leaders are the finest men, and we elect them again and again. And that's what I learned in school today. That's what I learned in school.
There you go.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why there was such a backlash to Dylan going electric, because they thought he was moving away from, you know, that kind of socially conscious type of, you know, speaking truth to power or whatever, to electric music, which they thought was more, you know, more Beatley type of stuff, more, you know, I want to hold your hand, less, you know, less heavy type of stuff. So that's why people were, you know, thought Dylan was such a sellout at the time.
Huh.
And he did really move away from any sort of social consciousness with his music. I mean, there's exceptions, but for the most part, you know, the early stuff on his first, you know, a couple albums, you know, that he didn't really repeat any of that. He was never, you know, Joan Baez and I was going to say, like, Joan Baez would even comment, like, any sort of teaching, any kind of protest, anything like that, you never saw Bob Dylan there at all. He's like, I don't want to be a part of any of that. You're not going to use me to advance any causes. I'm not interested. So he just always stayed away from that, which is kind of weird.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, what was funny was when Dylan moved away from the folk singing type of stuff and, you know, the political activism, that's when people like John Lennon were like, looked at his lyrics and wanted to be more like that. So the Beatles eventually moved towards Dylan. And then, mm-hmm. you know, like the Rubber Soul album got Brian Wilson to sit in a room and want to write the best album ever made. And then that album provoked the Beatles to write more stuff like that. And so, I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. they were all kind of in competition with each other. And, you know, Dylan may have started it all.
Like, listen to the song, You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. It just sounds like a Dylan song.
Yep.
That John Lennon's doing.
Right.
So, oh, there's the dog.
That's a ferocious dog.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there must be somebody walking by with a baby. That really pisses him off. He goes nuts.
All right, let's go to a more well-known song by Pete Seeger. This is Turn, Turn, Turn.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn, 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 and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time of love, a time of hate, a time of war, a time of peace, a time you may embrace, a time to refrain from embracing. To everything, turn, turn, turn.
Of course, that was made famous by the Byrds.
Yep.
Yep, with some electric guitars, right?
Yeah, 12-string Rickenbackers. They, you know how Leonard Cohen always says that Jeff Buckley made the definitive version of Hallelujah? I bet Pete Seeger must have acknowledged that Bird's version just kills his, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, that makes what he sang sound like a bad cover.
Even though it was his song? Yeah, well,
it's
you
his
know.
Song. It's kind of disjointed, and like his phrasing is awkward.
Yes. Well, it's just a basic folk song, so it's kind of cool to see what the Byrds did to it.
Wow, mm-hmm. Pete Seeger apparently getting no grace period after his death. Baird's going right after him.
No, yeah. I'm going to squirt this guy's so-called legacy. You know, you think like, okay, he's 94 or whatever he was, like that's pretty old, but I was reading some articles after he died, and they had a picture of him playing his guitar in a room full of people, which included Eleanor Roosevelt. So I'm like, all right, that guy is old, right?
Yeah.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Well, yeah.
Wow. And not like an old Eleanor Roosevelt, like a, you know, White House era. So pretty crazy.
So even in the early 60s, he was like in his mid-40s at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty weird.
It's almost 100 years. That's almost a century that he lived.
That's a good long time.
Yeah. Yep. All right, that's all I've got on Pete Seeger. So,
He was a communist, too. There's that.
He and Charlie Chaplin?
Charlie Chaplin was?
Oh, yeah. He got deported from the U.S. He had to go live in Denmark or somewhere.
Yeah. Hmm.
Denmark's cool. That wouldn't be so
that
bad,
is right? Cool.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
All you got to do is be a communist.
No, I think you got to do more than that now.
Oh.
That's when it used to be easy to move to Denmark.
Yeah.
They tightened up the immigration regulations there.
There's more of a chance that Denmark wouldn't take you than the U.S. shipping you over there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
I've got one item of music news. Maybe you guys have more. My music news item is Trent Reznor getting really mad because the Grammys producer cut him off. Did you guys read about this?
No.
I did.
You know,
I follow him on Twitter, so I actually saw the original tweet.
Yeah, so they do this thing where there's the outro, right? So it was Trent Reznor and I forgot who those other guys were, but other famous rockers. Dave Grohl was in there, wasn't he? And the guy from Queens of the Stone Age, maybe?
It was pretty much the Sound City music people.
Yeah, right. Okay, so...
Lindsey Buckingham.
Right, right. So then apparently what happened is they kind of faded it out and put the credits over it and cut him off a minute or two early, right? And he got really pissed.
But see, the thing I don't understand is they do that every year. So apparently he's never watched a telecast because, I mean, even during the telecast, our friend Stephen Thompson said, all right, who's going to do the Hilton Hotels, you know, playover tonight? It turns out it was Trent Reznor. So, I mean, they do it every year and you know what's going to happen. So apparently he was just completely unaware that, or he's never watched the Grammys telecast.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, it seems like something that's pretty common. But then the funny part of the story was where the producer later said that he was drunk and that might have explained it partially. Did you see that?
No.
The executive producer said, yeah, well, you know, I was feeling pretty good by that time. Some musician, I forgot, was it like Jay-Z or something? I don't know. Some musician was filling his glass with alcohol. And by the end I can't imagine this, that this guy's the executive producer and he's got to be like in the control room, right? So it's like some guy walking in there and giving him alcohol. and then, you know, he's like, oh, well, you know, I guess I was feeling pretty good by then.
Yeah,
so
yeah, a national TV show where it's like the one chance that the music world gets to promote itself to the entire world every year, and this guy's loaded.
Yeah, and why would alcohol make him fade it out too early? I mean, it's like it's weird.
Maybe he has to like go to the bathroom or something.
Yeah, that was
what
that was
any sort of broadcasting, anything to do with that, you just cannot have alcohol involved. Am I right, guys?
Right, exactly.
You can't record things or do things on live TV or whatever.
Right.
Podcasts.
Have any
right.
Podcasts.
There's no place for
it. It's right. Not professional.
Well, I guess he has a strict rule of no alcohol should be involved in any podcasting.
Maybe the bigger news about the Grammys was that we were live tweeting. I think pretty much there was a big buzz surrounding that, I think.
There was, yeah. I was not entirely satisfied with how I did.
I wasn't really either.
I was I don't know. It's a hard thing. It's like, a hard, you know? Like, seriously, I know. Even though I have like 52 followers, I haven't tweeted in over a year. And but I still felt a lot of pressure to be funny, and it's hard.
Yeah.
Chris, you're a lot better at it.
Chris
you've
is a
got
seasoned
thousands
veteran.
Thousands of tweets and, you know.
Yeah.
There's not so much pressure on each one. Yeah. So
you wanted to make everyone count.
Yep. I started off.
So each one of mine is like 10% funny. So when I do 10 in a row, it all equals up to like one funny one.
One of them will hit.
There you go. Yeah. It's better than that. 20% funny at least. Yeah. Some of them anyway. No. Yeah, so I don't know. One of the first things I did, I made a really flat gag that was totally bullshit and dishonest when I said I saw Chris listening to Macklemore on Spotify, and I put the little hashtag. Well, first of all, I spelled Macklemore incorrectly, right? I was too lazy to even look it up. I missed the K. Mm. Secondly, Chris had already explained to me that was his kids. Right? So I was being dishonest.
Totally disingenuous.
Thirdly, it's like, I don't know, as a podcaster, I should probably have listened to it at one point, right?
I took it pretty personally. That was actually...
I just had to publicly apologize and admit that was a pretty, pretty weak shot. So
that was the big story of the night, that Macklemore swept like all the rap Grammys, which upset people quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, somebody without artistic merit won a Grammy.
I know.
Shocking.
It's going to do a lot
I don't
more
even think they mentioned Kanye West's name the whole telecast, did they?
Well, exactly.
I mean, give me a break. So people are like, oh, how did Macklemore beat out, you know?
Kendrick Lamar.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I could name a lot more things that might have been in there in contention than either of those guys.
What's funny is Kanye West has won like 20 Grammys. He used to be like the darling of the whole Grammy crowd, but then he kind of he kind of fell out with them, and now they want nothing to do with him anymore. Even though he may have made the best rap album of last year, they just don't want him to be kind of the face of the Grammys anymore. So
yeah, it's got to be totally political. I didn't even think of that because
Kanye, you're out.
Yeah, I wasn't really big on the Kanye West album, so I kind of just it didn't even occur to me when I was watching the Grammys. But it, you know, I would have criticized it by saying it's a popularity contest. But if it were purely that, then Kanye West would have been on it. So
yeah, he gets big points for if you want to use artistic merit or popularity or a combination. If you do all that, you can't leave him off at least of a nomination.
Right,
it's ridiculous.
Do you think they're
isn't he the one though that came up when somebody won like best female artist or whatever? He came up and was like grabbed the mic and. Is that him or am I totally mistaken?
I think it was him.
Taylor Swift.
Right, yeah, yeah. So
Taylor Swift won some Video Music Award or something.
So basically he got
and he thought that Phosphorescent should have won it that year and he gave him up.
Yeah, that was it. they banned him for disciplinary reasons then, right? That's really what's going on.
Kind of like we do with Chris.
Right.
When he misbehaves.
Every once in a while, he's on suspension for a month or two sometimes. We just don't really talk about it publicly. Yeah. All right. Now
just
there's
one more piece of news that I'm curious what you guys think about. And that is Motley Crue's, I mean, this was actually on the news, like on the CBS Morning News, how they signed this agreement that this next tour was going to be their last.
Right.
Like it's this binding thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, hey, we have this contract. So it says we're never going to get back together. So obviously that's a serious thing. Okay, what the hell?
Yeah.
I think it was drafted up by their fans. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Please make this your last tour.
if you see what they look like, I saw some footage of them playing like a year or two ago, you know, one of those festival telecasts on TV. It looked like they probably didn't have too many more tours left in them, so this might very well be the last.
And then Tommy Lee was like, we don't want to be like these other pathetic bands. I won't name any names, but, you know, with only a couple of original members, and like, we wanted to go on top. It's like 30 years too late for that, dude.
They can't even see the top with a pair of binoculars.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, like Kiss doing 10 farewell tours or something. They probably have.
Speaking of bands from a long time ago, still actually doing pretty well. I also wanted to mention that yesterday was the 20th anniversary of Green Day's Dookie album coming out.
Yeah,
and I know that's not your guys' thing, but it was a pretty important, pretty influential album for 1994.
Mm-hmm. I kind of did like that album when it came out, and then. To me, what's even more amazing, though, is what they did after it, because it was sort of a basic power pop album, and then you know, by doing American Idiot, they were just like, that was amazing, I thought.
Yeah, well, they, you know, you had the kind of hair metal era, which got kicked out by the grunge era, and the grunge era was kind of, you know, if that was like a hearkening back to the Black Sabbath era of heavy, slow, dirgy music, then Green Day in 94 came out. And they were really kind of a return to the, you know, the Ramones, the Buzzcocks, that kind of era of power pop, fast stuff. And that was pretty influential. They suddenly Berkeley, California became kind of a big area of music. Like bands like Operation Ivy became Rancid, and then they became nationally known. They signed to Lookout Records, which made a lot of money, which let them sign bands like Ted Leo. Bad Religion got really big around that time. Those types of bands. And so, you know, 94, they were actually Weezer came right after that. So they kind of shifted the music landscape at the time. And I think they went off and made a bunch of good albums in a row. They weren't commercially successful. They kind of fell off the map in terms of people buying their albums. But you're right. In 2004, they came back with American Idiot, which kind of got them back. You know, the album before that won a few Grammys, which is interesting because it's probably one of their worst albums.
Hmm.
But so they made a big comeback in 2004. American Idiot went on to become like a big Broadway success, and they've made a few good albums since then. So yeah, so they've been around for 20 years. I still think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
Wow. There you go.
20 years for Green Day. Yep.
And Billy Joe Armstrong was on the Grammy singing an Everly Brothers song.
He just
which
came
was
out
our last death of the week. It's all coming together.
he and Norah Jones just actually released a full album of Everly Brothers songs together.
Yep.
Wow.
It's called Foreverly.
I saw that.
I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, do you guys...
Gotta say it real slow, and then maybe Will will pick up on it. Foreverly. Like it's two words.
Yeah. I got it. It's easy to slip things past me, but that one I actually got. You know, as we are recording this, there's a death of the week. There was just a death. But it's in the entertainment world, not the music world. A famous actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
What?
Just died of a drug overdose.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Let me check this out.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Hold on.
Okay, well, we're going to pause while these guys look it up.
This is like crazy.
Yeah.
I got to go tell my
wife. Just right on CNN. It's right on the front of the CNN page.
Hold on one sec.
Hey, Jay. Philip Seymour Hoffman. Holy crap.
Hey, yeah. Jay.
That guy was a good actor, too.
Drug overdose. I mean...
He was only 46.
Shouldn't surprise me that, you know, somebody that's in the entertainment industry is taking drugs, but I don't know. I never heard anything about him. Oh, that's awful.
I mean, yeah. I suppose if you put odds on, like, who was probably heavy into the drugs among the popular actors of the day, he'd probably pop up pretty regularly, but...
He would? I guess... I don't know. I guess I don't... I had zero idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking.
Well, that's too bad.
That is too bad.
All right, this is a music podcast.
So what was his last movie? What are we going to remember him by? Let me check it out here.
He was in Turner and Hooch, right? The last one I saw, I just saw Capote.
Yeah, he's great in that.
Yeah.
He was in a movie called Doubt. It was a pretty good one with Meryl Streep.
Mission Impossible 3.
He had a run of a lot of successful movies.
Oh, he was in the Hunger Games, the most recent Hunger Games movie. The Master, I believe, which he may have gotten nominated for something last year. He was nominated for 3 Oscars.
Wow. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, that movie was nominated for 3 Oscars. Anyway, wow, that's
drug
crazy.
Drug overdose.
All right, guys, it's my fault that I
must have
allowed
been,
the
like,
podcast.
Pre-gaming for the Super Bowl. Okay. You got to at least make it to halftime, dude.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, there's a new album by Damian Jurado, and I'm glad Barrett told me to listen to this. He's been around forever. I couldn't believe it. I looked up, you know, his discography. He has like 10 albums or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. And it's just a name I've heard for a long time. And Barrett said this new album's pretty good. So I listened and boy, I think it's really good.
Yeah,
so,
me too.
Barrett, take us through the new Damian Jurado album.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's, what can you say? Like you said, he's got a good 10, whatever albums. He's been recording since the mid-90s. Initially, he was just putting his stuff out on, like, real lo-fi, out on cassette tapes and stuff. And then he was discovered by, I just read this, but somebody in, like, Sunny Day Real Estate or something, one of these bands, discovered him. And Sub Pop signed him, put out a couple albums on that label. Since then, he's moved to, what is he on now? Like, one of those Fort Wayne, Indiana labels, like,
I think Jake. It's secretly Canadian, maybe?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think
that sounds right. And this one's quite a bit different than the other ones. I haven't listened to his last couple. I used to buy them religiously, like from 2000 to 2000 and whatever, mid-2000s. I was buying all of them. And then they, you know, they got a little samey. They'd be, you know, pretty downcast. And this one is just a little, it's got a little bit more punch in the production, and there's... All the songs are very catchy and melodic. Well, at the same time, they're on the sad side. You know, they're played in kind of a minor key that really kind of casts a little bit of sadness over the whole thing. But the songs are so catchy and so good that it's kind of uplifting at the same time, if that makes any sense. And I'll start by picking the second song, and I'm not looking at the playlist right now, so...
That would be the song Silver Timothy.
All right.
I was met on the road by a face I once knew. Shapeless was his frame and his colors were few. We went out for a time.
So what'd you guys think of that one?
I think that song really is a good example of the... my son just told me that I should use the sign. See, I have the sign on the inside of the room here instead of the outside.
Yeah.
See the podcast in session, do not disturb sign? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
Doesn't do much good, right?
So I think
unless you have like a people in there watching.
Right, exactly. And they have to know not to disturb us.
Right.
That song is a good example of the really good production on the album, right? So if you hear that, it's just this lush, interesting production, and that doesn't tell you about like what a great just pure singer-songwriter he is. And that video I sent you guys yesterday, one of the songs on the album, just him playing his guitar, and it's like his voice is just really commanding, and the song is great, and So I got caught first by the production, and then I started to really appreciate the songwriting and his voice. Mm-hmm. So
it was produced by Richard Swift, who produced that last Foxygen album.
That's an interesting connection.
So there you go. And who is now a member of the Shins as well.
Oh, really? With the Danger Mouse guy? No, he's the Broken Bells guy. I don't get that whole thing where James Mercer and the producer guy have a band. I don't know. I'm not sold on it. Okay, that was a total diversion. Back to Damien Jurado, and I'm going to pick the next one so Chris can't have it. Chris, you can't have track 4, Metallic Cloud.
Is it temporary?
Damien Jurado. That's my standout track. But I like it all. It's a good album. It's called Brothers and Sisters of the Eternal Sun. So let's turn it over to Chris.
Yeah, I liked him a great deal like a decade ago. That song also featured a solo by Barrett's Dog.
That was the Barrett's Dog remix, actually.
Yeah. It's like at the end of Pet Sounds when Brian Wilson's dogs are barking.
In fact, when my wife was pregnant with our first daughter, I dragged her. She was about 6 or 7 months pregnant. I dragged her to a Damien Jurado show, which I'm pretty sure I still owe her for that. Go ahead.
Was that at the Catacombs?
It was.
Did I know you then?
We may have.
Did we go together, maybe?
No, I'm sure we did not.
Because I was there. I don't know if we knew each other then. That was on the I Break Chairs tour, right?
Correct.
And it was terrible.
I thought it was all right.
What is this? I mean, it's the real outlier though in his catalog. That's the rock one that
yeah
he abandoned that right away.
No, I but, just,
yeah,
just last
that's cool.
just last night I listened to Rehearsals for Departure, which was my favorite at the time, and I really like Where Shall You Take Me was another one, another album of his that I liked a lot. So yeah, and then I kind of feel the same way you did. I thought it got a little samey and a little kind of boring, so I was really happy for this album to come along, which I really liked. And I was not going to pick either of those songs, so you guys are both off the hook.
All right.
I picked
both
one
wrong.
No, they were on the list. But I picked one from a little later in the album. This one's called Silver Catherine. Yeah, so that's a pretty straightforward, folky song. It's funny that you mentioned Foxygen, because to me that almost kind of has like a Fleet Foxes type of feel to it.
I was just gonna say that. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's got like a little I'm a sucker for violins or for orchestration. It's got a little bit of it in there, but I think just enough. It doesn't overdo it. So I think that's a nice touch.
Yep.
I was sure that one of you guys was gonna pick the Justin Vernon sound-alike song. Do you know which one that is? It's eerie, like how similar that is.
Oh, we should play a little bit of it then. Which one is it?
Yeah, I don't know offhand. I thought that one of you guys would know.
Well, I did know there was. I was going to make that point in that song that definitely kind of has that Bon Iver type of feel to it.
Right. One of them, though, even more so.
And this guy was around before Fleet Foxes and Bon Iver, so it's about the time he gets his due, right?
Absolutely.
So I guess that's it. That's our sampling of Brothers and Sisters of the Eternal Sun. My introduction to Damian Jurado, and you guys, of course, have had a long background with him, so maybe some of the listeners will be in my position where they'll discover him now.
You know who I think should use that producer that did this would be Jim James. If he made an album that sounded something like this with his voice and his songs, I think it would be really great. That thing he did last year was just, I don't know. I was listening to it today, and this isn't any kind of a review of it, but he just makes some pretty bad, artistic choices in production, that stuff.
Yeah, so I think I listened to that.
Maybe Richard Swift will be the hot new producer.
It could be. I think I listened to a little bit of that Jim James, and I sort of thought the same thing.
Just stupid.
But you see, he's a very talented guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
One more thing about this. Do you know the Milwaukee connection with this album?
No.
I do.
Okay.
The cover looks like it's one of the Mitchell Park domes.
It is.
Also, The artist that did it is from Milwaukee, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you sent that around. You sent an email about that, right?
Indeed, I did.
Is that that guy? Yes, they did a story in the paper a couple weeks ago about how he's done all this album cover art. It mm-hmm. must be the same guy. Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
So there you go.
Do we both say that a lot?
I think we do.
Yeah, it's like
kind of a good.
It's like good how do you
segue?
Sum it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm gonna tell the listeners about War Paint. And have you guys listened to this at all?
I've not.
I listened to it a tiny bit.
All female band from LA, and they're sort of ambient. Now, whenever you hear that, that's like a bad sign, right? I think this album is about 60% really good, and about 40% just purely going for a sound without the songs to back it up, and it's not very good. But there's enough good stuff on it that people who are inclined to like this sound might like it. So here's a song called Keep It Healthy. That's War Paint.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I think they do a pretty good job with the whole mood thing, like I said, on 60% of the album. And they are coming to town in, I think, like late March or something. And I'm thinking this might be one of those bands where the, you know, the fact that their album has a few kind of dull songs might be okay live, because they'll, you know, they'll either spice those songs up or they won't be part of the set list. So I think it could be good. So this is their second album. It's self-titled War Paint, but it's their second album.
Where are they playing?
At, I think, the High Noon.
Okay.
Yep. So here's another one, Love Is to Die. Thank you. Maybe if the XX rocked a little more, they'd sound like this.
I was trying to figure out what that sounded like. Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. I'm trying to get away from this thing that I always do, which is to say, that sounds like something, but I can't figure out what it is.
Right.
And what do you have to say? Like, that's not worth saying.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I do say that all the time. Have you guys noticed that? Probably.
Yeah, a little bit.
Anyway.
Okay. I also wanted to mention that Philip Seymour Hoffman nominated for 4 Oscars, won 1 for Capote. Hmm. Also, the previously mentioned Justin Vernon from or Bon Iver has commented on the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman on Twitter. Let's see, where is it? Phil Hoffman, your acting truly affected throughout so many performances and years. God damn it all to fuck. This world will miss you. So there you go. Quote from Bon Iver on the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That's nice.
Boom. All within the same within the same podcast.
That's not really a bad use of Twitter, I don't think. It's just a reaction, you know? I'm going to say that's okay, as much as I'm still ambivalent about Twitter. Yeah.
I don't know how you could be at this point. Twitter is, well, are you just sort of anti, you know, social media? Do you like Facebook? Or
I don't like the just the whole mechanics of how Twitter works with all those at symbols and pound signs and stuff. And when people try to respond to people, and then there's a whole bunch of ats, and then you can't tell who's responding to who and who's replying to who. And
you're just anti-hashtag.
Whether it's public or not. And well, and hashtags are always just a bad joke. And so, you know, these are just my gripes about Twitter. I'm not against the whole, you know, social media concept.
So basically, but, it's like you and the Unabomber.
Yeah.
Both Luddites.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to drag you into the 21st century.
All right. Yep. Yep.
I'm not particularly fond of Twitter myself.
Really? I don't use it a lot. I mean, we use it for the business. Like for my personally, I don't say like, "Hey, I went skiing." You know, I just, that's not, you know, it's not for me. But if anything's happening in the world and you're like, is this a big deal? Look at Twitter and see where it is in the trending topics.
That
see who's talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is like real-time news.
Right.
Like,
but on
nothing
the other hand,
else can be anything close to that.
On the other hand, I feel like it's changed the way that I read now. Like, because there's so much information, so much flying through that I just kind of try to skim it all. And it's kind of really hard for me to tell what's important and what's not because I'll read every other one or I don't know. My attention span is already that of a hamster. So
and also, like the internet, maybe in many ways, it sort of gives this illusion of an equivalence. Like you could be following, like, you know, Walter Cronkite, and then just some dork, you know, and their tweets come right after the other, and they look the same, you know. So it's just like everybody out there blurting, regardless of level of. I mean, of course, it's your own fault, I guess, if you're following people who are dumb, but
sure. And also, if you just typed in Philip Seymour Hoffman, Twitter is going to arrange the top tweets, you know, so it'll say what Justin Vernon said, and it's not going to say what, you know, if I went on there and said something.
It'll
nobody's going to see that except my followers. So it does sort things out,
filters some
according to sure, and then you can click view all tweets, and it'll have everything. But so. I like it, you know, but as far as, you know, what it's done to our attention spans and things like that, yeah, I think that's been a problem. It so has, like, reading a book and having an iPhone in your pocket. Like, to me,
right,
that's the worst thing that's ever happened to reading. And I'm trying to read this World War I book right now. Every little thing, you're like, you know what, I could read, I need to cross-reference this, like, I want to learn more about von Schlieffen. I'm like,
yeah.
Boop, boop, boop. And then you get stuck there for 20 minutes. And then you go back to reading and you're like, oh, more footnotes needed. It's really slowing me down. So, yeah, I think we all need to unplug once in a while, get back to having some attention spans that allow us to, you know, read a damn book.
No, well, Barrett and I are both reading about World War I right now. And I was reading something and, you know, the fact that the American army was stuck in a war with Mexico with Pancho Villa. So I go online, type in Pancho Villa. There's an hour-long documentary about him on YouTube. So then I just like blow my whole night like watching a documentary about Pancho Villa.
Yeah.
And then I'll get back to my book later.
Yeah. So yeah, when you sent that link to me, I'm like, oh, that's great, thanks, but I'm gonna have to wait on that. At least until I get up to 1918.
Yeah. You know?
Okay, but, before we sign off, I'm gonna give Warpaint one more song. This is Feeling All Right. Okay, there's a sampling of the War Paint album, so check it out. It's at least 60% good.
So that means it gets a 6, right?
Well, let's see.
But then the 60%, that part of it would have to be perfect.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And then it would get a 6.
Right, right. If 6 songs were 10s and 4 songs were 0s, yeah, yeah. But I'm a little more sophisticated than that, so I'm going to give it a 7.0.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, but Damian Jurado is clearly the star of the week. So, hey, speaking of which,
I'm sorry, what was that? I was checking my cell phone.
And I just got
typing
this
in War Paint.
I can't get. I'm going to personally blame Chris for this. I have the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel app, and I can't get it to stop sending me push notifications. It like beeps when it wants to tell me news, and I can't turn it off.
I am personally responsible for that.
You are.
Just go into your phone settings. It doesn't have anything to do now with the
newspaper
app.
I thought I did that. Well, we'll try it again. Tech Talk. Oh my God, I was listening to this podcast called Life Hacker. God, what classic nerds those guys are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's interesting because you have, you know, all of us use tech to some degree. And so sometimes it's fun to listen to, but sometimes it's so nerdy, it's ridiculous.
You realize if the Life Hacker guys listen to our podcast, they would say, oh my God, what music nerds those guys are.
Yeah, they'd be like, these guys are a bunch of idiots. Yeah, I realize that.
Bunch of music dorks.
I totally realize that, yeah. All right, that's it. I think this might actually be over an hour, even after I edit it. So this is good content. Again, giving the listeners their money's worth, right?
Absolutely.
So got anything else to say? Any parting words?
R.I.P. P.S.H.
Yep, and Pete Seeger, too.
Word, yeah.
All right, we'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast from iTunes or any podcasting app. You can contact us directly by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com or by posting a comment on our webpage, willsband.net. You can also contact us through the social media, which means Facebook at facebook.com/willsband or Twitter at willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.